This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to What's News Dunedin, brought to you by Casa Valencia, the radio show that spawned from the 23,000 plus strong local Otipoti Dunedin What's News Dunedin Facebook group. The group that's been putting the social back in the social media since 2020, with respectful adult debate and a sense of humour. I'm your host, Richard Knights. On today's show, we're talking to our wonderful guest, Professor Charles Brennan, Pro Vice Chancellor of the Science Division at the University of Otago, who'll be telling us a bit more about themselves and what they do, as well as helping us look back at the posts that generate the most interactions over the past 7 days on the What's News Dunedin Facebook group. Those three posts this week are Councillor Ong breaching confidentiality and deliberately sharing emails titled Confidential with media, $39 for a standard sized cheese and tomato pizza in Auckland, and the opening of the Changing Places accessible bathroom for people with specialised needs. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. Now, before we get started in the serious stuff, we have our what we call our Monday joke that we bring to the show, right? So what happens in the group on a Monday, I get everyone to bring their best puns and dad jokes to the Punday Monday post. And whoever gets the most laugh reacts, I bring it on the show, basically. There's no science involved. It's just literally whoever gets the most laughs, we're going to see whether the joke comes off the page into the spoken word and it still gets the same reaction. But of course, I'd like to just point out right now, you're under no obligation to laugh, right?
I'll start laughing now.
If you start laughing earlier, everyone just thinks it's there's a competition going at the moment between Max Reed and Andrew Perkins on the show as to, I think, to who gets the most jokes on the show. So anyway, this is our pun of the week this week. This girl said she recognised me from the vegetarian club, but I've never met her before.
Okay. Yes.
It's a groaner, isn't it? To me, it's
That's even worse than some of mine, I think. But it's up there, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. If you can't groan at a dad joke, I don't know. What's the point in them?
Yes. Well, that's what my kids say. Well, yeah. They're not kids anymore, but yeah.
Yeah, mine are the same. Like as soon as they roll their eyes, I know I've won. That's as simple as that. Now, I have my three pop questions. I've been asking guests for 2.5 years these pop questions when they come on the show, right? So just basically, I believe it gets under the skin of our guest and lets the audience know everything they need to know about you as a person in three simple questions, right?
Okay.
So the first question is cream teas. So where you have a scone and you have jam and you have cream, what goes on the scone first, the jam or the cream?
Well, having spent nearly 8 years, 9 years in Newton Abbott down in Devon, it's obviously the cream.
Oh, you're doing it the wrong way. This is the trouble when you spent time in Devon. You needed to get the self across the border into Cornwall where they do it properly and they spread the jam and the cream goes on the top. As a man of science,
yeah,
Charles, as a man of science, how can you spread jam on cream?
But if you're going to have toast, do you put butter on and then jam or marmalade or your preferred condiment?
I would say yes, but I wouldn't put cream and then jam on my toast.
Well, cream is just sort of a fat replacement for the butter, isn't it?
I see what you're trying to do there.
Yeah.
I see what you're trying to do there, but I think there's a whole county right next door to Devon that would just say you're doing it wrong.
Okay.
And to be fair, it's the only question that you can get wrong on my show.
Well, when I pop down to Penzance, obviously I'll change my answer, okay?
Yes. I think it's important to be flexible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think when you do it the other way, you'll realise how wrong you were before,
and
potentially.
And following up from that, any good Devon creams or Cornish cream sort of teas around here?
I don't know, because I'm a big fan of clotted cream, like
the really thick stuff
that just kind of like you have to cut, you almost have to cut with a spade, that kind of cream. That you don't get it here. Like in the UK, you'd have been there. There's like seven different versions of cream. You get half cream, you get single cream, you get double cream, you get whipping cream, you get clotted cream. Here you get cream. And then after that, I don't know what you're supposed to do. Like genuinely, these creams for me, and I love cream, and I will have literally any dessert you put in front of me if I can have cream with it. There's different grades of cream, and clotted cream's right up there as the top. Shall I say?
Not good for the arteries, but certainly good for the taste palate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you can get clotted cream in New World, I think.
Okay.
But it's not quite the same.
Yeah.
But it's like when I go back to the UK, it's like I just go and find myself a cream tea. But I think the high tea at Lanark Castle is reasonable. But I've not been there to – I can't attest to it personally.
Okay, so I'll need to go on a field trip and do some experimentation.
And then you come back on the show and bring your cream tea expertise with you.
And I need to bring the cream tea here for you to sample as well.
I think that's probably a very good idea, actually. You heard it, everyone, listeners. This has been arranged. This will be happening. Now, the second and third question you can't get wrong, okay? So the second question is, who is your favourite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
Oh, D'Artagnan?
That's a musketeer.
Oh, okay.
But you want Donatello.
That's where you're heading for. Yeah.
They're all Renaissance painters.
Yeah.
So I don't know about you, but like when I was a kid, Three Musketeers was the game you played with your brothers and sisters. Like there was four of us, right? So we had the ability to be Aramis, Athos, Porthos, and D'Artagnan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In like all between the four brothers, right? So we were always outside fighting with bamboo canes, like as the Three Musketeers.
Yeah,
we're talking pre Ninja Turtles at that stage. I'm guessing. But that's why it's easy to get confused.
See, I'm of an ilk where I didn't quite watch that. I probably watched sort of Scooby Doo a lot more, and then sort of it was Knight Rider and things like that. So reminiscence and stuff.
Same.
And the A Team in terms of having a plan come together.
Oh, that was Saturday night. That is a memory for me of Saturday night viewing at my nan's house. We used to go to my nan's house, the whole family, like 600 of us, like all descend on my nan's house, and then we'd all go and sit in my uncle's room and watch this tiny sort of like 6-inch TV thing. And all watch the A-Team on the Saturday, half past five, whatever it was, before we all went home back to our respective homes. But all my cousins would all be like squeezed on the bed, like literally like triple decker, like stacked. And then we're watching this tiny, tiny television in my uncle's room to watch, because all the adults were in the main living room where the big TV was. And you weren't going to go in and put the A-Team on that. We went, my uncle just, you know.
And did you sort of tune into the Dukes of Hazzard, the old
Dukes? Or the old ones. Yeah, absolutely. I'm a lot older than I look.
Oh, okay. Charles. Well, you look sort of 18, 19. But
see, this is the wonders of radio. We can pretend that's actually true. Anyway, third and final question, and this is a thinker. Would you rather be the youngest child or the oldest child?
Well, I am the youngest child, and I wouldn't change anything.
I think my youngest brother, would say exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
I'm second eldest. I'm kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I didn't have the responsibility. But then I get all the memes about how the second eldest is the – I don't know if you've seen them on the internet. The second eldest apparently is the guy that's ending up in prison. The guy that, you know, he's the bad egg. You know, he's the black sheep of the family. I certainly have hit that now firmly on the head, I think.
And did you get all the hand-me-downs as well?
Not so much, because my older brother was actually quite substantially bigger than the rest of us. So I don't mean that in a nasty way, but we were skinny kids, like me and my three brothers, yeah, below, and my other brother was a little bit more stocky.
Yeah.
So they never really worked. No. They were too big.
Yeah.
Even when we'd kind of grown beyond that, you know. So but no, not often. But we did have matching jumpers that my nan used to make. Like slightly different colours, but every Christmas we'd have these matching jumpers. We've got these photos year after year after year. Like there's four of us lined up with a different Christmas jumper on, but they're all kind of like my oldest brother would have like the green one. I'd get the red one, some of the blue one, some of the yellow one, and we'd have. You know, I think that's how Mum basically worked out which one of us was which.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that on the Facebook page.
There might be some of that, to be fair, on my personal one, to be honest.
But
because it was four of us, and we're only 5 years apart. There used to be some of that kind of like, every Christmas we get a different flavour jumper.
And those jumpers of the 80s and sort of 70s, 80s sort of mark, you know, they are of a style, aren't they?
They are quite of a style, yeah. But I think that's a very nice way of putting it, to be completely fair. But like, yeah, so I'm kind of glad we grew out of that one. But it took us a while. Like we were still in our young teenage years when we were still getting matching stuff. My nan used to spend all year knitting for the four of us. You know? It would take her all year to get those four jumpers done. Anyway, moving on. Let's stop talking about my jumpers and we'll start talking about the news. Now, the first topic of the week is our favourite councillor, who's in the media almost every single day, Councillor Ong, got himself in a bit of a sticky situation earlier on in the week by breaching confidentiality and deliberately sharing emails. After confidential with the media. He started off, I think, with an email chain where he was copying media into it, which he does a lot of anyway, so we're kind of familiar with that. But then I overstepped the mark by mentioning something that was kind of – that shouldn't have been said. Then there was an email, I think, from the CEO, Sandy Graham, or from the mayor, kind of saying, or no, there was an email from Andrew Sims, Councillor Sims, saying, hang on, something's gone awry here. You know, we're saying things that we shouldn't be saying and sharing with the media. And there was an email from the CEO kind of explaining, titled Confidential, that Councillor Ong forwarded to the media 11 minutes later. That's deliberate, as far as I can tell. That there's, I don't know what the reasons are for it, but it's certainly that's not someone that's gone, oops, sorry, my bad, I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? I mean, you, as position where you are, you must have to deal with a reasonable amount of confidential information, and there's pretty strict rules around confidentiality, full stop, like, you know, like across this whole country. They're changing the, I know they're changing the data privacy laws from the 1st of May, like to make things even harder or more robust around gathering of information.
Yeah.
What's your take on it?
A lot of it is about that respect that you have for the people that you're serving and also the people that you're talking to. So in our positions in the university, and I work at Otago University, just giving it a plug there again.
Absolutely.
In Otago University, there is confidential information in different layers. And we've got to be very attuned to who we are releasing that information to, and also whether or not there's any damage associated with that. So in this position that you were mentioning, sort of 11 minutes after that they've received the information on the email, that sounds as though they might have thought about something in that 11 minutes and had that sort of train of thought. Is this information sensitive? What am I going to be trying to do with that information? In my case, I would have treated it more respectfully and potentially, and I would have valued that confidentiality in that request.
I think, I mean, there's if you spend any time on social media, and I do, I spend probably far too much time on social media. If you go, there's always the cry from a certain element of the public about transparency, especially when it comes to council. I'm sure there's probably an element of that happens within the university as well. But I get it. I totally get it. Like we want to know that the people that we've entrusted with doing the job that we've entrusted them to do are being open, transparent, honest, all those kind of bits and pieces.
Agree.
But what we also want to know is that they can be trusted with things that actually remain confidential for a certain period of time. Because it's important that it does, you know, so that there's no whatever commercial sensitivity, or it's one of those things like, you know, if you suddenly blab to the market that you're thinking of buying the land over there by the side of the house you live in, suddenly the price goes up, right? Because they find out and suddenly they realize that it's actually really, really important to you, because if you can't get that piece of land, you can't do this wonderful thing that you've got planned. And then suddenly the price goes up and it ends up costing more money. So transparency is not necessarily something that's going to save the ratepayer money. Total transparency. If there was total transparency of everything that happened in the universe, in the council, you can guarantee that our rates bill would be higher by simple virtue of that, right? Because everything would be pre-warned, pre-known. Everyone kind of go, that land that I was going to sell for $2, well, I guess it's $4 now, you know?
Yeah.
That's the risk, right? And you want, I want someone at the table that understands that whilst transparency is absolutely of paramount importance, equally so is confidentiality.
There's a responsibility to have that transparency, and it's very clear in terms of we shouldn't be hiding behind sort of layers of confidentiality, and I agree with that, and that's on the table. But as you're saying, there is also that responsibility to the person that's sharing that information with you, and also your role in whatever organisation you are, in terms of not releasing information or not sharing information that wasn't supposed to be shared.
Mm.
So people all the time have confidentiality, conversations with me, but it wouldn't really be in my best interest or their best interest or the other community to be sharing that information. And exactly the same here in terms of what you're saying about the council.
No, fair enough. Whether there's going to be a code of conduct complaint now come off the back of that would be another thing. And that's the other side of costing more money. You know, these people, Councillor Ombi in one of them is there saying, I want to save the ratepayer money. But so far, he only appears to have cost the ratepayer money, because we've had two code of conduct complaints that have literally formed through him. One he brought and was thrown out quite quickly. The other one was against him, and they were found quite categorically that he was in breach of the code of conduct. So that's a cost to us as a ratepayer.
Yeah.
That's not a saving yet, you know. And if another code of conduct complaint, and I genuinely can't see how it doesn't happen, because it's so categorically obvious that it's a breach. Again, that costs us more money. And then every time you get a lawyer involved, cha-ching.
Oh, yeah. Lawyers
are the only ones making money out of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, there's an opportunity always as a councillor to save money by not getting a code of conduct complaint against you. You know, that kind of should be primarily.
Well, you're sharing information that in terms of, you know, we're only 8 weeks into being residents of Dunedin coming here.
Wow.
So this is news. This is all news, breaking news to us in terms of all that sort of interplay in terms of the councils and stuff. So, yeah, thank you.
Wow. Where were you before?
Oh, well, we'd just come over from Melbourne.
Oh, nice.
But before that, we spent nearly 10 years in Lincoln in Christchurch.
Wow. Okay. So, well, yeah. And we'll talk about that probably when we get in the second half of the show. But second topic of the week, $39 for a standard size cheese and tomato pizza in Auckland. So the cost of living crisis is obviously is on everyone's lips at the moment, right? Everyone's struggling. Even the people that have got lots of money appear to be struggling, especially with the cost of fuel and everything else. And Stuff did a very unscientific – they just tried to – I think they must have just started in, you know, getting a Google pizza, whatever, and came out with this restaurant in Auckland, a 12-inch pizza for $39, cheese and tomato, right? Mm-hmm. So there wasn't even any meat on this damn pizza. Cheese, $39. And apparently, out of the 1,000 or something they sell a week, 300-400 are this $39 cheese and tomato pizza.
Yeah. It must be good.
That's what I was thinking. I'm not a huge fan of cheese and tomato pizza full stop. I like a bit more substance to my pizza, if I'm going to be completely honest. But and then we got into the discussion, like, you know, when you talk of places that we've got some great pizza establishments. This is another one for you. There's some more news. We've got some great pizza establishments in Dunedin, Sal's being one.
Oh, okay.
And they do big pizzas, like, they do the 18-inch pizza. So
and how much are they?
Well, they're about $39,
okay.
Like for the big ones. Yeah. Like, so we're, you know, I mean, I like a pizza. I probably couldn't eat a whole one of those. I could definitely eat a whole 12-inch pizza on my own.
Yeah.
But these are sort of like easily shareable between two, but they're the same kind of dollar value. And they got into a quite interesting conversation. It's like, where do people see value? You know, because at the end of the day, in a cost of living crisis, to me, even if you're living in Auckland, right, $39 pizzas will be kind of one of the first things that came off my list of things to be spending money on.
I think, yeah, that's really interesting in terms of where does the consumer themselves feel that the value is in the food that they're buying. Now, you're completely right in terms of cost of living. Well, that's one thing that we found that coming back from Australia, yeah, the price of cheese in New Zealand has skyrocketed. The price of meat and everything else is really quite high. And it's happening across all of the world. But sometimes it's about the occasion, the location, the environment that you're partaking of that meal. So you can sort of excuse a high price for a normal meal in a salubrious place. But if you compare it to a pizza chain, for instance, you know, you wouldn't be expecting that. But still, $39 for a 12-inch pizza.
Yeah.
Seems rather high.
It does a little bit,
doesn't
it?
I don't think it'll be something I would be buying.
No, and I love food, like genuinely. Yeah. You can't tell from the size of me, but I literally am run by my stomach. But whilst I'd like to taste that, I wouldn't like to buy it, if that makes sense, because it would just feel very, very wrong. One of the things I noticed coming from the UK to here is that fast food in certain aspects is actually really, really cheap compared to the UK. Because you'd come over, when I was living in the UK, a Domino's pizza would be sort of £15, so $30.
Yeah.
Whereas when I came over here, you're buying Domino's pizzas for like $6, $5 for a Domino's pizza, which is like
£3. Like, it was like, you know, like 500% cheaper than, I don't know if my math's right, completely. Don't test me on that.
No,
but it's, you know, significantly cheaper for one pizza to there. And, you know, and you can see why people were spending quite a bit of money like buying Domino's pizzas rather than going out and buying shopping at the supermarket, because actually it's – but like, scale that up. I can see that if I got a bigger pizza, how much that could be extra worth, because I can feed one, two, three people with that same – for that same dollar value. But a small pizza just – yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
And I love Italian food. Maybe not pizzas that much, but sort of the Italian food. But also coming here and doing that price comparison of elsewhere, I'm a great one for fish and chips and mushy peas.
Yeah.
And, you know, fish and chips used to be quite inexpensive here in New Zealand compared to elsewhere in the world. I think that comparison is beginning to sort of slip, and
it's
getting to be about the same price, if not a little bit more expensive, again, depending on where you're going.
Yeah, no, I'd have to say the same thing. So I want to move on to topic number three, which is the opening of the Changing Places accessible bathroom for people with specialised needs. Now, I think this is an absolutely fantastic thing.
I would agree.
But again, spending time on social media, that's not the general feel from – that's not the feel from everyone. So – to make it for anyone that's listening, the Changing Places specialised needs accessible bathroom is like an accessible bathroom, like the normal accessible toilet, but like on super steroids, right? There are like adult sized changing areas. There are shower facilities. There are hoists and mechanisms to move people around that genuinely have really high specialised needs. It's not just people who need an accessible toilet, right? Which is also part of the block. And this seemed to get lost in the noise of the announcement. There's a public toilet there. It's right by the railway station. There's a public toilet there for the able-bodied people. There's an normal accessible toilet for the people who have normal accessible toilet needs. And there's this now new bathroom for Changing Places, which comes with a fee, an annual fee at least, to get a key to have access. Because what they don't want is everyone and his wife going in there and using those facilities because they're the nicer ones and potentially vandalising, damaging, you know, causing more wear and tear than it was. And it came in at a dollar value of $750,000. Which the council budgeted for, and the thing that upsets people again, because they get it's their right as a ratepayer to scream and yell about stuff, is the cost. And a few accessible friends of mine have made the point, like, but any time one of them goes to go and buy anything for their individual needs, the cost of those things are so much higher than the normal price for everyone that it's understandable that actually when you're starting to put big stuff into a space like that, that price is would seem to be unreasonably high, but it's because everything costs so much damn more because of what they are, because it's specialist equipment. You know, if you're a chef and you buy a specialist knife, it's 10 times the price of the stuff I pick up at Briscoe's. But it's because there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
But I think the actual facility is first in the South Island, in the entire South Island. Christchurch doesn't have one, like Nelson, no. Dunedin does, and I think it's an absolutely fantastic addition.
And I would agree in terms of the facility looks fantastic. Haven't been in there. I've only seen sort of the pictures on social media and stuff like that. You know, the facility looks absolutely fabulous. The need is there.
Yes.
Because there are so many people now who have that need that aren't sort of – that need that assistance, extra assistance, when they have to go to the toilet or use the facilities or things like that. And certainly with elderly in-laws, we realise that sort of just an ordinary cubicle is not good enough, an assistant sort of cubicle is not really good enough. You need to have the full whack in terms of if they have mishaps or if they need to do other things. So I think there is that need. The price point is an interesting concept, yeah, and we've already talked about this in terms of confidentiality and sort of the price of land if you sort of blab about sort of what you're intending to do. But specialised equipment is very expensive and sometimes very prohibitive.
Yeah.
So it's good that the council had gone out and done this to allow people to have access to these type of resources.
It allows them to get out of the house because at the moment some of those people are literally housebound because they know that they've got a very small window of time to leave the house to do something to come back because of their needs. But now they can go into town, know that there's a facility there that they can use, and not have to be rushing back, you know, straight back to their own place. It frees people up to be more, you know, to be more out there, to be more out in the community, and I think that can only be a good thing. The other thing they were talking about was $150 to have a key.
Key, yeah.
I believe my understanding of it is that some of that can be funded, if not fully, then partially for those people, because it is people that are really highly specialized needs. It's not just someone that thinks, oh, I might like to have a shower once in a while, you know. So, you know, again, when you're talking about value, when you're talking about your $39 pizza, $150 doesn't actually seem.
Having the ability to know that there's a facility there that's clean, that's usable, and readily usable if you are in that need in that particular moment is actually quite a good value in terms of that. It's hard to then compare it because if you were in a similar situation, you might need to go to a public convenience or you might need to go into a shop and ask whether or not they've got a toilet facility, and they're not comparable. No. So what is being provided there for people who are in a real need of those type of occasions, probably because of surgical procedures or other types of procedures, that's a real value for them. Gives them the ability to have that freedom, like you say, to get out of the house, to be on their own, and exploring around the beautiful areas. We want people to get out of house. Want people to enjoy the sunshine. I'm looking out through the windows, you know, blue sky here, and this is fantastic Dunedin. So anything that will encourage that, rather than just being cooped up in your own home, it's fantastic.
It's good for your mental health as well.
Yeah.
But if you spent some time in the UK, like you said you had, you'll understand that back in the UK, you often pay to pee.
Yeah.
And you often pay to pee in places and bathrooms that are far, far worse condition than the facilities that we have across the motu in New Zealand. It's like one thing I noticed when I came here was that actually you can use a public toilet. I would never have used a public toilet, paid or otherwise, in the UK, like unless it was the absolute emergency of emergencies. We're actually here. They're actually pretty well looked after and maintained.
Well, I was in the UK over the last summer. And I needed to use the facility. This is an interesting conversation now.
We do all the important stuff on the show.
I had to use a facility, and I was in St James's Park, and it cost me, I think, £1.
Wow,
what's that?
$2.
$2.50 now.
Yep.
To just do a pee.
Yeah.
So you know that's not really good value, is it?
No. Not really.
I didn't spend that long in there, honestly.
You're supposed to spend a penny, aren't you? That's the whole point. That's what it's called. But it's like it's got far more expensive.
Yeah.
I want to talk about you very much as well. That's why you're here. But before we do, let's have a quick word from our wonderful sponsor.
Dunedin, meet your new favourite bakery. Casa Valencia at 53 Musselburgh Rise is serving up freshly baked bread, pastries and gorgeous cakes. And if you haven't tried the ube donut yet, you are seriously missing out. Our signature purple yam donut and purple yam drink are the must-try combos your taste buds have been waiting for. Pair it all with a hot or cold drink, grab a cake for someone special and make your day a little sweeter. Casa Valencia, 53 Musselburgh Rise, Dunedin. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. See you there.
Now, Casa Valencia was the place I was just before I came here because I work on Musselburgh Rise. And I go there every day for lunch because they are fantastic. So if you ever get the chance to go there, it's like Filipino bakery's got like empanadas and steamed buns and they make these special, they got it called a sisig pie, which is like a spicy pork mince pie. Like you won't find anything like it anywhere else in Dunedin. And the people in there are just genuinely the most lovely human beings. You can stay all day, literally. You could go in there, have a chat. Hours and days could pass and then you wouldn't even know about it. And suddenly, you know, your family's calling you up saying, "Where? I'm still in the bakery."
So that's Casa...
Casa Valencia.
Valencia.
Yeah, okay. Just on, you go drive out the bottom of Andy Bay Road, past the BP, do a little wiggle, and then there's the little parade of shops where they're doing some roadworks and stuff at the moment, and it's just down there.
Okay.
Genuinely fantastic.
Question then.
Go on.
Gluten-free?
Couldn't tell you.
Because my wife, Margaret, you know, she's gluten-free, and it's quite difficult sometimes to find a cake or a sandwich or something like that
fits
her.
I genuinely think some of this stuff is. But it's not something I look for because I'm thankfully not. I'm not anything free. I just literally just dive right in, you know. It's not something I have to consider. The only thing I'm allergic to is not having enough food. But I'm fairly certain they do, but they've got some fantastic delights in there. Absolutely.
Okay. I'll have to look it up.
Absolutely. Now, I want to talk about you. So you are Pro Vice Chancellor of the Science Division at the University of Otago. Mm-hmm. You've obviously just said you've only been in Dunedin for the last 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So obviously that's a relatively new appointment.
Yes.
So perhaps give us a bit of a rundown. Give us the 5-minute Cliff Notes version of Charles Brennan, Professor Charles Brennan. What are you a professor in, for starters? And to get us to where we are today, because I genuinely love our university. I think it's one of the most fantastic parts of our city. And I love the contribution it makes both from a cultural student population and research and endeavours kind of method as well.
Yeah.
So please give us a little, maybe just give us a little bit of an intro.
So first of all, thank you very much. I'm Charles. So I try to drop the professor as much as possible because it's a great title and it's a hard end title. So I'm not belittling the fact that sort of people come up to that rank in a university, but we are just people. So we're just like you and anyone else. So it's Charles, and let's have first name terms, and that's the easiest thing to do. I you would have picked up that I come from the UK. I'm a Mancunian. I come from Manchester.
I won't hold that against you.
I support United.
I won't hold that against you either.
I hope that there's not too many City fans on there. I'm hoping that City don't win the Premiership this time.
But, and as a Spurs fan, which potentially I'm getting relegated, okay, I'm hoping Arsenal don't win.
Yeah.
So,
well, good luck with the relegation zone.
I think we're going down.
Anyway, so I was born in Manchester, moved around quite a lot, went to university at London University, Imperial Y College, as it was then, and then did my PhD at King's College London. Moved around again to Durham and down to Plymouth and Newton Abbott, I mentioned. Then came over to Massey for around about 7 years at Palmerston North. And Palmy was a lovely place to come in sort of experiencing the warmth of New Zealand. And the people in Palmerston North are fantastic. Then we popped back to the UK for 3 years. And then back to Christchurch, Lincoln, and Lincoln was a lovely university as well for about 10 years, 5 years over in Melbourne, and then I've ended up here in Otago, and it's a great privilege to be here. My own area is in plant science. I'm a botanist by training, and Margaret, my wife, is a botanist by training. I sort of found out that botany is really good, but I was really interested in what plants do in terms of our health. And so you have to go into food and food science, food technology, and all the ultra-processed food sort of malarkey that we've heard a lot about recently, and then how that impinges us on our nutrition. So for the last 20 or so years, we've been working very much in terms of obesity, diabetes, glycemic control, glycemic load, and now more into neurodivergent sort of issues and sort of things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, where that sort of food and human nutrition nexus overlap. And I'm really just fascinated by science in general. So as someone who's now here at Otago University looking after the science at the university, I'm just blown away by the fantastic minds that we have, not only in the staff, but in the students that come along. You know, we had some year 12 and year 13 students visit last week, and they were asking very, very difficult questions, probably even more difficult questions than in my interview at Otago University.
More difficult than the ones I've asked?
Oh no, of course not, Richard. how could I ever say that?
No, exactly.
And I think that vibrance of that community, that sense of belonging that we are are discovering newness and then creating impact for the world. That's something that we as scientists sort of, and as academics, or we as people, are striving for, because it's really, how do we create that real life impact for society?
So explain this to me, because I've spent quite, when I first came to New Zealand 15 years ago, I worked for Canon, and I basically sold the university all their printers.
Oh.
So if your printers don't work over there,
yeah,
it's partly due to me, because that was my first job. For the first 5 years I was here. So, and the university adopted Canon printers across the whole campus. But one of the things I noticed when I was, and I've noticed since, is that it's very difficult to tell who's who. And what I mean by that is, you have a vice chancellor.
Yes.
But then you have a chancellor, but yeah, it's slightly different.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you have pro vice chancellors. Now, to me, a pro vice chancellor sounds like they're bigger or better than a vice chancellor, but that doesn't appear to be the case.
If you've seen Grant and you know Grant, I'm certainly not bigger or better than Grant.
No, but so a pro vice chancellor, where do they sit in the hierarchy? I guess is the question.
Look, the hierarchy of a university is really intriguing, because it varies between different countries. So I think sort of New Zealand, Australia, the UK follow more or less the same situation. If you go to America, it's completely different. If you go to China or Asia, again, it's slightly different in terms of the interpretation. So the chancellor is someone who is not necessarily overlooking the day-to-day interactions of the university, but is giving very good strategic direction. And we've got Trish Oakley, and she's fantastic. We've got then Grant Robertson as the vice chancellor, and he's giving that strategic direction. He's into the weeds in terms of how to operationalize all our PITATA agreements and all that sort of thing, looking at the vision 2030, 2040, and seeing how we can implement teaching and research and outreach activities, and how he can oil the machinery to allow all the divisions in the university work for the benefit of the students and the staff. And then you've got DVCs, deputy vice chancellors, that are under the vice chancellor.
So you've just blown my mind. I didn't even know those guys existed.
I know, so you were leaving that out for me just to surprise you, weren't you? So that deputy vice chancellor sort of gives that strategic direction in terms of either research or academic or internationalization. And they help the vice chancellor in developing those strategic plans. And then in amongst all of that, we have the PVCs, the pro vice chancellors, who look after the disciplines, the academic disciplines. So I'm in science. We have another person, Megan, who's involved in health. And then we have...
Is that Megan Gibbons?
Megan Gibbons. You know her well.
Family.
Oh, brilliant.
She's my sister-in-law.
Well, she is fantastic.
She's awesome. She's been on the show when she was part working at the Polytech.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, I think she's still over in Shanghai, because she's doing a little bit of internationalization. You might want to pick up on that when you see her next, because that's really good. But then we have humanities and we have business. So we have four of us that sort of look after our own academic divisions. And then beneath that, there's the heads of departments or the heads of schools or deans of schools that look after their own sort of academic disciplines. So for me, it would be botany or physics or maths and computing, zoology, psychology, food, human nutrition, all those sort of things. So it is quite a complex structure for people. And that's why I say, just call me Charles.
Absolutely. Now, from botany is what you said that you're interested in.
Originally, plant science, and food and human nutrition.
So as a PVC, pro vice chancellor, how dirty do your hands get? Like, do you still like lecture? Do you still teach? Do you still have any impact into that, or is it really much more a overarching sort of management view?
At the moment, it is quite overarching management. I have given a guest lecture. I wouldn't say I teach, because that's a large exaggeration of my capability nowadays, and also my flexibility. I've taught into sort of the food science area. I'm going into human nutrition in a couple of weeks' time, and then sort of talking about dietary fiber and human nutrition and health and gut microbiota and everything else. So stay tuned if anyone's interested. So
you sound like the kind of person it would be good to have on a quiz team.
Oh, probably not, because my memory,
like biology type stuff, not biology, but you know, botany, biology, human biology stuff.
My memory is terrible, Martin.
I don't know why.
So
I do the jokes, Charles.
Okay. Gosh, I've been told now. We do get the ability to teach, and I think that's really important, because you can't separate. You can't sit in your own office and understand the pressures that the students are under and your colleagues, the staff, are under, unless you actually experience it for yourself.
All right.
So I do like getting my hands dirty, but I don't like micromanaging.
I'm with you.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah,
there is that very subtle difference. And sometimes if you get too involved, people will possibly think that you're getting too involved in the general direction. It's again sort of that trust and building a culture of respect. And I respect everyone around me in terms of their ability to do complicated things, far more complicated than I can do.
One of the things that I love about this city, and I love about being in this city, is the connection, the close connection between wonderful minds and people like myself, right? I mean, like, if you go back to the UK and you'd been there yourself, you didn't really get to talk to like a pro vice chancellor at a university or a vice chancellor. I've spoken to both now. You wouldn't get to talk to your local MPs, because actually you kind of separate away. Whereas here, I've had local MPs, I've had councillors, I've had like all manner of people on the show, and I would consider some of them friends. And I love that about here. But what I love the most about here is that the almost daily, there's a story coming out of the university about a piece of not just like leading edge New Zealand research, but kind of cutting edge global research or global discovery that's coming out from what we're doing. There was something about the size of a grain of rice helping figure out what type of, from what have been health sciences, something about you know what type of cancer you've got.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, like, and that's coming out of the people and the brains and the amazing minds that is literally like within walking distance to the studio right now. How does it feel to be part of it? I know it might sound silly, but are you kind of conscious while you're there of what's going on? Because I sit on the outside in admiration, genuinely.
I'm very conscious of what's going on in terms of, I'm in awe, like you are, of the great minds around us and what they're putting in place. I think it's tremendous potential for Dunedin, for the South Island and for New Zealand and for the world. I think I've also got that awareness that we are stewards of that knowledge, generation, and also making sure that we can disseminate that knowledge as widely as possible to create that impact in society that I've mentioned. So there's also a huge burden on us in terms of our shoulders to be able to facilitate that to the students, to the staff, to all our collaborators, wherever they sit, whether or not it's in New Zealand or elsewhere. And certainly sort of, it's actually fun. I know that some people would say it's a lot of pressure, a lot of responsibility and all that sort of thing. But the ability to change systems, change minds, create a thinking culture is wonderful. And that's what university is about. That's what education's about.
Fantastic. I want to pick up on something you said a little bit earlier in a second, but before I do, I'm just going to get another quick wonderful word from our sponsor.
Dunedin, meet your new favourite bakery. Casa Valencia at 53 Musselburgh Rise is serving up freshly baked bread, pastries and gorgeous cakes. And if you haven't tried the ube donut yet, you are seriously missing out. Our signature purple yam donut and purple yam drink are the must-try combos your taste buds have been waiting for. Pair it all with a hot or cold drink, grab a cake for someone special and make your day a little sweeter. Casa Valencia, 53 Musselburgh Rise, Dunedin. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. See you there.
Now, you mentioned something about nutrition a little bit earlier on, where you're talking about nutrition and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Now, my mum is well beyond the stage of saving when it comes to Alzheimer's, but has, over the last sort of 5-6 years, is now completely debilitated by what I believe to be one of the cruelest diseases that anyone has to deal with. You know, she's a shell of a human being that used to be my mum, which is horrible. But therefore, I was kind of trying to trigger my synapses when you're talking about nutrition having contribution. So I'd be interested in, and I don't want to go too into the science too much, but I wanted to understand a little bit about what you mean, because one of my fears is that that's coming for me, if that makes sense. And if there's anything I can do to avoid it, then I'm all in. And especially if it involves eating, I'm doubly in.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. Yeah. I don't want to make light of it, but like, you know, genuinely, it's something that genuinely interests me.
And well, first of all, I'm really sorry to hear about your mother. It is an unfortunate circumstance of getting old nowadays, I think for us, the damage was done when we were 30 or sort of late 20s. And I think that's where the information's coming from in terms of if you are able to change your diet and your regime and everything sort of in that 20-30 zone, then the risks associated with these type of Alzheimer, Parkinson's diseases, neurodegenerative diseases decreases. I think from our point of view, of being a vaguely similar age, although I think I'm a little bit older, I think that's about now minimizing that risk. And diet comes into that. And I'm a great advocate of eating as much fresh food as possible. I'm not totally against ultra-processed foods. There's a lot of information sort of going in there saying that ultra-processed foods are the devil. They're harmful to everybody and everything. I think we need to temper that broad brush approach and understand why they're there. So fast foods, I would much prefer sort of a salad or something else. So having that deliberate choice of eating relatively good food and fresh food, which are high in fiber, high in bioactive ingredients, not wanting to do too much of the science lecture, but sort of phenolic compounds in plants. So I eat a lot of mushrooms because the mushrooms are quite good in fiber, protein, and also in terms of those bioactive ingredients.
I can't wait to tell my teenager that. And they hate mushrooms, but I love them.
And those help regulate sort of the gut microbiota. And that gut microbiota and the relationship with the brain and the brain aspects and how we digest food is really important. So the blood sugar levels and all that sort of thing is important. Exercise is really important.
Don't say that. I don't like exercise.
But exercising your brain is really important.
Right.
So pub quizzes or other types of things, even Sudoku and stuff like that, it's been shown from our psychology department that if you do a lot of those type of activities to keep the brain active as much as possible, reading and things like that, gardening, yep, talking to people, that social interaction is...
Don't say gardening, Charles. I hate gardening.
Okay, don't. Walking on the beach with your dog.
I don't mind walking. Yeah. Walking's all right. I can do that.
That's good.
I just kill stuff. That's the trouble. It's not that I just want to go gardening. Like everything I touch kind of turns... I'm sort of black-fingered rather than green-fingered.
Well, I'm sure we can do something about that, and we'll start the gardening program later on. But never mind. But yeah, you touched on one of the things earlier about the disabled facilities, the special facilities that were just opened. That's also one thing that we can do: enable people to get out of their house to experience the different environments, because the brain gets triggered. Yep. By those type of signs and signals. And that means that brain is active because everything's sort of happening in terms of having that neural response. So I think if you can try to be as active as possible and maintain that activity for as long as possible, then that's good.
Yeah, so just but keep body agile, keep brain agile and try as much as you can to kind of
having cups of tea and talking to each other, or sitting in a radio studio with a mic in front of you and talking to you each other, that keeps our brains active.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. So as we hit the last 5 minutes of the show, and I told you this time would go...
Gosh, it's gone fast.
I told you it would, didn't I, beforehand? And that's why I love doing this thing. It's just literally moments just happen. What's your... Obviously, you've been brought in, PVC, science division. What's your sort of five-year plan? What's your vision for what you're bringing to your division? And what are you looking for from, for over the next wee while?
What I want is to showcase how wonderful we are, how wonderful the academics in the university are across the whole of the university. So it's not only the division. We are the University of Otago. So we need to be having those interdisciplinary type of relationships. Science is obviously very important and obviously the most important aspect of the University of Otago. But that interplay between science, society, health, and those are things that we need to be looking at to build the benefits to society. And so when we're talking about those benefits, bringing in new ideas, whether it's students or whether or not it's industry or partners in terms of the other types of collaborations, having more of that tan and gown feel would be fantastic. So if in 5 years' time or 10 years' time or wherever, whenever I go and things like that, if we have a better relationship within our staff, within our students, within the people that we serve, then that would be fantastic.
Because we do get a little bit of that noise from the university about culture, and you would have seen it probably reported in the papers. There's always something, especially when there's talks about cuts and stuff, then there's always the talk about the culture, the bullying and those kind of bits and pieces. And we've seen some of that over the last few years. Again, I kind of take it with a grain of salt when it comes from the ODT in the sense that they do seem to have a very anti, in my mind, they seem to have a sort of a bit of an anti feel for the university as much as they do for the council. They want to try and drum up clickbait news rather than necessarily get under the surface of a research article or a smashing amazing piece of discovery that's cutting edge and forefront world leading kind of thing. Is that something that you've just come in? Is that something that you're aware of, or something that you've kind of or something that you're working on, or is it just kind of actually is it more noise than it probably might be? Does that make any sense?
Yes. No. I think I get where you're coming from. I think there is a lot of noise, and there has been a lot of noise, and that clickbait, that news. You've got to sell a paper. You've got to sell airtime and things like that. So I can understand where journalism sort of goes in that respect. But when you start talking to people on a one-on-one and having a cup of tea with them and understanding sort of where they're coming from. The vast majority of people, and I say vast majority because I'm a scientist, so I can't say everyone, the vast majority of the people that I've been talking to are so passionate about being here in Dunedin.
Yeah.
Much more passionate than any other university that I've worked in.
And I feel that too, because I say I spent a lot of time when I first got here walking. I know the campus intimately because I went to, everywhere that had a printer, basically, and to see what their needs were. And I would have spoken to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of staff, and I genuinely never came across someone that was miserable. Like there was, I can say that hand on heart. Like they all felt they had a part and a place and a piece to play, and they were all very. Not gushing about the university, but certainly, they were proud to be part of it.
I certainly gush because if anyone follows me on LinkedIn, they would see that I gush regularly about how wonderful the people around me are. And I think it is a real pleasure getting in there at 7:30 in the morning, having that vibrance of the students there, really passionate about their learning, having the members of staff there, professional and academic, all working together to try to create real benefits to society and to the local environment. I think it is truly a remarkable place to work, and I am honoured and privileged to be here.
Are they the largest employer in the South Island, or are they the second largest employer? I'm not quite sure whether it's one or the other, but they're up there, aren't they?
I'm sorry, I come from science, not HR.
Oh, no. I thought you'd have the numbers if you science.
We're up there, but I would imagine that we're probably, we might be first, but I would imagine we're in the top three.
Just remember it being when it was like, but it's just it's an amazing contribution to it, to the economy as well, and we still struggle to get the proper funding for tertiary.
Yes.
And that's not this government's fault. It's every government in the last maybe 30 years.
Yeah.
We actually, without what you're talking about, without those discoveries, we are going to be a world that's worse off.
Look, funding for tertiary education, research and teaching and helping the students, that's next time you invite me here, okay?
Yeah, well, that's a whole show on its own. And we have literally run out of time. So thank you very much, Charles. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Great to meet you. Just sit there while I round out the show, and you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's a wrap for this week. Thank you for tuning in. I've been Richard Knights, and you've all been wonderful. Remember, if you're looking for a robust, respectful adult debate about all things local and further afield and a welcoming online community that doesn't take itself too seriously, come and find What's News Dunedin on Facebook and join our fun. On next week's show, we're talking to Brandon Johnson, local Otipoti Dunedin activist, and look forward to seeing you next Friday at 12 on ORFM. And if you want to listen to the show again or simply share it with your friends, you can find the podcast at oar.org.nz or even on Spotify, YouTube or your favourite podcast provider.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.